one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Here.
Councilmember Funk.
Here.
Councilmember Newsom.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Here.
Mayor Moreno.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. I want to take a moment tonight to recognize somebody that we heard passed away just this last week, Bob Kelly. Many of you knew him. He moved to Atascadero in 1975. He lived here for over 40 years before he and his wife, LaVon, moved to Oregon back in 2017. And leading up to that, he talked often and excitedly about it. And if you look at his Facebook page, it says, you know, retired at living the life. And I have no doubt that he was doing that. Bob served the city for 16 years. He was on the Planning Commission from 2000 to 2007. And on the City Council from 2008 to 2016, during which time he served as Mayor Pro Tem, as Mayor, and as Chair of the Redevelopment Agency. His background in law enforcement, real estate, construction, all those were incredibly valuable to the city. He served on many committees, as every council member does, and I had the opportunity to serve on the Finance Committee with Bob. And Bob treated the finances of the city as if they were his own. He took that stewardship so seriously, and that's something that I really, really appreciated about Bob. And so if we would just take a moment of silence and remember somebody who was a dear man, a dear friend, and a servant to Atascadero. Thank you. And now I will be looking for an approval of the agenda.
Also move.
I'll second.
Of a motion by our Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We have a presentation tonight for Foster Care Awareness Month. Is Angela Holmes here?
She's not here yet.
Okay. Would you be able to receive it on her behalf? Wonderful. Well, how about I read the proclamation and then have you come forward? Sound good? All right. So this is a proclamation. May 2019 is Foster Care Awareness Month. Whereas Foster Care Awareness Month is celebrated nationally to raise awareness about foster care and to encourage more community involvement and as resource families, volunteers, mentors, and employers. And whereas there are more than 430,000 children in the United States, more than 60,000 children in California, and over 350 children, youth, and teenagers in the county of San Luis Obispo currently in the foster care system. And whereas the city of Atascadero fully recognizes the importance of providing children safe, healthy, and loving homes when they are unable to remain in the home of their biological family. And whereas to help these children have a healthy, loving, and stable home environment where they can thrive and feel connected to a community that cares for them and to support the resource families that provide these critical homes, the City of Atascadero is hereby acknowledging National Foster Care Month to help raise awareness about the need for more resource family homes and local children, for local children. And whereas this effort, along with similar celebrations in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, will help children to have the chance to live with healthy, loving, and stable resource families when they cannot live with their birth families, and will encourage other dedicated individuals to make a powerful difference in the lives of a child. Now, therefore, we, the City Council members of the City of Atascadero, do hereby proclaim that May 2019 is Foster Care Awareness Month. So, sir, if you would like to come forward, we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, City Council. I was actually just asked to come here by Department of Social Services, expecting that I would have a partner here. So, but because their work is a difficult one, I know that's where she was probably held up. So I'll just give you a few words from our perspective. I was asked just to speak.
If you could state your name for the record.
Christopher Key.
Thank you, Christopher.
And I was just asked to speak because we are a foster family. I was born and raised here in Atascadero, second generation in Atascadero, so I'm very thankful to live here in this beautiful town. My family and I have been involved in foster care since 2014, so for about 6 years. And in that time, we've had five different children come into our home. They have been anywhere from about 3 months old to 5 years old. And we have had them anywhere from 1 month to 2 years. And so we have had a pretty good opportunity to see the gamut of at least those age groups. And we've been incredibly blessed to do it. We began in foster care as a result of my parents kind of paving a path. From my growing up, it was very normal in our home to have many different people coming in and living with us. And so my wife and I felt called also because of our faith in Jesus Christ that we're to care for the orphans. And so we got involved there in 2014. All of these children have been an incredible blessing to our family. And I hope in return that we've been a blessing to them as well. I just wanted to speak quickly to some common questions that we get or reasons that people don't think they could be involved in foster care. These are things I hear all the time whenever you say, "This is, you know, we have a foster child with us." People are always very gracious to you, but they always say things like, "Well, I could never do that because I would love them too much, and then to have them taken away would just be too difficult." And we also hear often that I'm afraid of the impact that it might have on my own children in our family. And another one that I don't know if I can love someone else's child as much as I love my own. People often say that. And I would just say to all those that those are legitimate. They are difficult things, but they can be overcome. And our experience has been that all of those areas, even though we worried about them, we love those children as our own. The impact on our children has been, in our case, at least nothing but good. We've always fostered children that were younger than our youngest, and our kids are usually the impetus for the next child. When are we getting another child? And I'll explain about one in particular here in a moment. But the important thing to remember that in foster care, we are doing this for the good of the child, not for the ease for ourselves or the comfort or the benefit to ourselves, but it's for children to have a safe place and a loving home while they are in foster care. This need, as you mentioned in the proclamation, is great, even in our county. Foster care, I would say, is not for everyone, but it is for a lot more people than are currently doing it now. And to that, I would just quickly say that there are many other ways to get involved in foster care other than actually having children in your home. Within our church, we have kind of what's called wraparound families. That is people who can't take children, but they can come alongside and provide meals, provide respite care, do all sorts of things to help families that are in the thick of it with foster care. And just one last thing that I get the opportunity to work a lot with the homeless population here in Atascadero. Very directly, and I talk to them a lot, and I know a lot of their stories. And it's my opinion that if we had more people involved in foster care, taking children that are in difficult situations young, we could help to stem the flow of people that fall through the cracks and become homeless, as we see a lot of that today. So I just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. So,
and is this Ms. Holmes that came in? Would you like to come up and maybe let us know, let the public know how to get in touch if somebody is interested in either being a foster parent or seeing how they can be part of that wraparound service if they're interested in getting more information?
Yes, thank you so much. After listening to that wonderful talk, though, I don't know that I have much more to add. For people who are looking for more information, we have a wonderful new website, slowfostercare.com. We also have a hotline that you can call, 805-781-1705. I have a small prepared speech that I'd like to share quickly. Thank you to the mayors and city council members for your recognition of National Foster Care Month in the city of Atascadero. The Department of Social Services would like to express appreciation to our partner agencies, Family Care Network, Seneca Kinship Center, Family Connections Christian Adoption Agency, Pathways Family Services, CASA, Martha's Place, CAPSLOW, Cuesta College Foster and Kinship Care Education, County Behavioral Health and Probation Services, and also to the amazing families in our community who open their hearts and homes to support and take care of children and youth who have been placed in foster care as a result of abuse or neglect. There are over 350 children, youth, and teenagers in the county of San Luis Obispo who are in the foster care system. There are only 150 families to provide care for them. Many youth are separated from their siblings, have to move out of county, or are waiting in hotels for families to care for them. In the past year, 55 children, youth, and teens entered foster care from the Atascadero service area. Only 12 of those youth, 22%, were able to stay in the Atascadero area. Our community's most vulnerable children need more families to step forward and provide a healthy, loving, and stable environment. In the folders I've brought with me, you will find more information about how council members can help to share the need in the community. Thank you again for recognizing May as National Foster Care Month in the city of Atascadero.
Well, thank you for being here. And if you like, come forward and we'll take a picture together. So now we will move on to the consent calendar. Consent calendar items are considered routine that we can just pass in one motion unless there is a member of the council or a member of the public wishing to pull an item. I want to start with, I know that we have a correction to the minutes for the May 15th meeting. We also have a May 14th correction as well. Okay. Is that something you'd like to let us know about?
Certainly. Thank you. For the May 14th minutes, item C2, which is on page 12 of the agenda, there was a listing of a public speaker that was not a public speaker, so there are no public speakers for that item, and that was the wastewater rate study report. And then for the May 15th draft minutes, page 14 of the agenda, strategic planning, we did not list a speaker that should have been included, and that is Karen Peterson.
Thank you very much. So just the slight changes to the minutes to reflect what had had occurred. And then I am aware of a member of the public that would be liking to pull item A7. Before that happens, is there any member of the council wishing to pull another item or needing clarification? Seeing none, if our member of the public would like to come forward regarding item A7. And item A7 is with regards to the Community Facilities District for the La Plaza project.
Thank you, Mayor. Hope everybody can hear me all right. I'm a representative from the La Plaza project. My name is Max Zappas, and we would like to pull item 7 for discussion. We think that our project is fiscally positive, not even neutral, so we'd like to talk about annexing into the district at maybe a discounted rate or something like that. due to the reason that it's in the downtown commercial zone, and the project's going to have great economic benefits for the city over and above what the community facility district would cover.
Okay. So what I'd like to go ahead and do is go ahead and vote on the remaining items, and then we can have a discussion to the extent the city attorney allows us to with regards to A7. So do I have a motion on the remaining items?
So moved.
I'll second.
I have a motion by Councilmember Fonzie and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau for the consent calendar minus A7. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie. Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Okay. So with regards to A7, this is the, as the applicant said, with regards to the La Plaza project and being annexed into the Community Facilities District. So I've spoken about this with the city manager, and actually if you could give us a little bit as council members and explain to the public what we're talking about here and what our options are.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. The item you have before you is annexation into the Community Facilities District. The Community Facilities District is a Mellow Roost district that is overlies the entire city, and new projects, new residential projects that have five or more units are annexed in, must annex into the Community Facilities District. The council does have an adopted policy that says whether or not a council is fiscally neutral, fiscally positive, or fiscally even underwater with the CFD, that all of them will annex into the CFD. The CFD rate is based on the difference between what it costs to provide services to a residential, typical residential, does not matter where they are in the city. A typical median home price residential unit, and the revenues and the benefits that are derived from that median home price unit, including, you know, not just property tax, but you also look at sales tax, recreation fees, all of those types of things, along with all the services. The cost was based on what that median home price, what it would cost to service that house, and the revenues generated in. That housing that is built that is less than the median home price, typically you would have a bigger number differential. Those that are over aren't. That's a long way of saying that, hey, your policy does not take into account fiscal neutrality or not. We don't have a study for the La Plaza plan to determine whether or not it is truly fiscally neutral. However, we all agree, I believe, that we believe that La Plaza and superior projects like La Plaza in the downtown that have a very strong commercial component in addition to the residential, that the council may want to consider, hey, do we want to make those, lump those in the same group as all of the other residential projects that we have. I would caution council that we have some fiscal sustainability issues here in the city of Atascadero. We are not a well-funded city. I was just putting together slides for Talk on the Block, and it always hits me on, oh my, we are not close to any of our neighboring jurisdictions on the amount of revenue that we bring in. But certainly there are always some key projects in town that stimulate and benefit more than just the face value, the square footage of retail. Does La Plaza, is that going to help stimulate and have a vibrant downtown which has general benefit to the community? You may determine, hey, there is some benefit there and some reason to lower it. We've already lowered it for affordable units. We have said that, yes, we know those affordable units have the same impact as the non-affordable units to our bottom line. However, there is a general benefit to the community in having those affordable units, and so they're not charged the same. In talking with the consultant, you are allowed to set a specific set of criteria and annex projects into a different zone, which may have a different rate and method of apportionment. You may also change your policy, and instead of saying all projects over 5 units have to go into the CFD, you could change that. However, staff doesn't recommend considering that just because of the time it would take to do that, because this is conditioned to be in there. If I missed something or you have different questions, I'd be happy to answer that.
What I'm wondering is, I believe that there is a precedent for making exceptions in the downtown when it comes to certain fees. And so when have we done that in the past to incentivize quality downtown development?
We've done a number of programs in the downtown. I know that for a while impact fees were different in the downtown. Our recent stormwater in lieu fees are set up specifically for the downtown. We've also had projects or like the city facade program and others that were only eligible for those businesses in the downtown. So it is certainly not unprecedented to have a little bit different standard in your downtown, as it's been a priority for the council.
Okay. So what we're looking at tonight is the applicant's pulling this item, so we could either go ahead and vote on it, but he's pulling it and they really don't want this. So we need to look at what, how are we going to handle this. And so it looks like the options available to us are we bring this back at another time and decide as a council, and maybe we can have a bit of a conversation tonight on the direction that we would give you. Do we want to do something like, you know, hey, this is quality development in the downtown. What sort of, as we look at our priorities and placemaking and the things that we're looking at in the commercial sector and specifically downtown, is there something that we'd like to do and ask you to bring that back? What are the other options?
So you have 3 options. They all have different time factors that go with them. The first option would be to go forward with holding the meeting and accepting the notice of intent and approving that for tonight. The applicant does have the option to vote no, but they are not able to get their final map or get their building construction permits until they are in the CFD. That is a condition of approval. You can, like you said, pull it tonight, not vote on it, give staff some direction to bring another notice of intent for a set a separate meeting date. In that notice of intent, again, we would have to have the rate and method of apportionment on that. And that would set a hearing date that had to be at least 30 days, but not more than 60 days after the notice of intent meeting. So we could do that, and it could come back on the June 11th meeting. And then we could hold here, have the public hearing. We have received word that we can have the public hearing on a special meeting. You have currently a special meeting scheduled for July 11th. So you could have that hearing on July 11th with the new rate and method of apportionment.
Okay. What I would like to do is get any questions or comments from council. First, let's go with questions, and then we'll go with a bit of a discussion about it. I'll look to the lights. Councilmember Fonzi, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau.
Yes, Mayor, I was wondering if we could hear from Max first to hear why he's bringing this forward. We had a very brief sentence, but I don't really know what your thoughts are on this.
Sure. So when we originally went to the city council hearing, I had brought it up at that time as well that we really don't feel like this applies to us. Unfortunately, at that time, and even before we bought the project, we didn't know what this meant, really. The community facilities district, we could sift through hundreds of files on the city website and maybe find when this was passed in 2005 or whatever it was. But the long and short is we started going through this agreement and we really felt that it really doesn't apply to us. It was, just to give a little bit of history, it was researched in 2004 and passed in 2005. And so if you think back to that time, that was the time of Kelly Gearhart and really incredible real estate growth and development with projects like Los Lomas Master Plan, Dove Creek Master Plan. Gearhart had a golf course annexed into the city, some other housing developments by Home Depot. And I think the city really did see a need at that time for a community facilities district with massive housing developments on the outskirts of town. And unfortunately, then in the subsequent years, as there, from what I can see, as the sales tax and property tax and whatever else started going down, the policy was passed that all residential projects have to pay into this. And so then we started running the numbers on, okay, first of all, what exactly is this going to do to our project? Just this one right here. And so, you know, we looked at what this tax means, and it means $32,000 a year in extra taxes that we really didn't plan for or even had any way of knowing about prior to purchasing the property. And so while $32,000 per year seems like, you know, maybe we could make it work still with 42 condos and some retail space, what it really does is when you apply the capitalization rate to that, it amounts to over $500,000 in value. So now we have to go to our lender and say, hey, our project's worth $500,000 less. Can we still get a loan to build it? And we haven't gone to them yet. We're hoping we don't have to, because as is, they're already, the appraisal is saying the highest and best use for this project is to just leave it as developed lots and wait for the rents to appreciate, where then the project will make sense. We could build it and get rents that, you know, the value will be over and above what it costs to build. But, you know, that's not what everybody here wants. And that's really, it becomes kind of a question of, you know, what comes first, the cart or the horse. We think that the Tascadero is turning around, but the current rents don't justify doing this development or any developments in the downtown. And so at the very least, we feel that this CFD, in the writing itself, it says it's for new growth areas. Downtown Tascadero is not a new growth area. That's an area that's been around since its inception. And on top of that, I think, you know, our argument is really that, look, the downtown commercial zone, while it allows residential, really it needs more incentive for it to develop. The residential is the only reason we got into the project. We said to ourselves, okay, we could build 42 condos here. Let's try and do that. But then when we get an extra tax because of that, it's like, you know, how can we make this work? And how is anybody going to make it work? How is anybody going to develop in downtown when all these crazy taxes just get tacked on top? So I guess to us, we just feel like it doesn't really apply to us. And we still haven't seen those original studies where they justified the CFD. You know, the case studies that they did were very likely those projects on the outskirts of town. And, you know, we haven't gotten a copy of those, and we don't think they're going to apply to us. The justification behind it doesn't seem to be there. So it's a really onerous requirement for us. We don't think it applies to us. It's not a new growth area. And you know, frankly, it makes a project hard to do with this tax. So that's kind of our perspective on it.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Thank you. Well, that partially answered my question. I'm still concerned because this was included as one of the conditions, and you know, you guys are very smart people, and so I'm just concerned about it coming up now, as opposed to that at that time. The concern about this, and I have some other thoughts on it because of some of the things you said. This, you know, obviously is very important to us to have development in the downtown area. And the fact that there is some retail aspect to the property that would generate some other revenue, because I think a lot of people don't realize we get about 17 or 18% of the property taxes that people pay in our community. And so that is why residential development does not pay for its own way, regardless of where it is in the city. So I guess my question to you is, how is this a surprise at this point in time? I mean, I think everyone up here is very, very, you know, extremely desirous of having this go ahead, and I'm certainly willing to consider rationales for exception, but a surprise is not something that I'm having a hard time visualizing that this is a surprise.
Let me just put it in perspective. The first time we saw the CFD was about 2 months ago, and in that agreement it said $440 per year per unit. And as I started digging, I had to ask questions. I met with different people at the city and found out that it's actually $640 per unit. So about 50% higher than the agreement said that it was. So even if we had found it back when we were doing the due diligence to buy the property, it would have been 50% higher than what we understood it was. So that's one thing. And then another thing is, like I said, how are we supposed to find this information? Yeah, we knew we had to annex into the CFD, and I tried to make it an issue at that initial city council hearing, but we would, like I said, we'd have to sift through hundreds of documents on the city website, which is already difficult to navigate as is compared to other websites. And then, you know, even once we find it, it goes up by 50%.
It's not even close to
accurate. The document's completely wacky. Right. It's not even close.
Yeah, that's because of the CPI since the time of the adoption. But
that's another conversation I'd love to bring up about it. Raises in this tax are not okay. They're really not okay. It says in the agreement the greater of 5% or the CPI of San Francisco, San Jose, which is in the past 20 years like 4 to 7%. So what the city of Atascadero is asking this developer to do is to have a tax that goes up 5 to 7% every year when our leases only go up at the most 2 to 3% a year. So how do we tell our lender, hey, we're getting this tax that goes up higher than our rents, faster than our rents?
Actually, that has changed. That is no longer accurate. So we can address that. But
it is the agreement we have to sign and agree to, and we're exposed to that risk, and so is our lender and partners.
My other question for you is, have you, I assume you've done some analysis because of for the financial viability of the retail spaces underneath these residences, have you done some analysis as to what those might generate in sales tax?
Absolutely. So that's another side of it. Beyond the cost of the project is the benefits from the project. So as you indicated, the sales tax, you get 7%, I think you said 17, but sales tax is 7%, 1.5% goes to the city, and that amounts to $10,000 a year, almost $11,000 a year in benefit to the city over what you're getting now. Then there's also property taxes, which you alluded to. It's 1.14% direct to the city, gets 18% of that 1%. And so that amounts to almost $43,000. So those two together are almost $60,000 just in property taxes and sales taxes, boost over what you're getting right now. And our CFD is about $30,000. So we're almost doubling the CFD number with just sales tax and property tax.
Thank you. I have a question for staff on this. Has staff attempted any analysis at this, you know, throughout our discussions on this project as to, you know, hazard a guess as to what the positive impact is elsewhere in the downtown area? Because our premise is that, you know, this is going to jumpstart downtown and bring life to downtown and increase the sales tax, not just by what occurs in the bottom floor of the building, but in all of the surrounding businesses. Do we have a ballpark guess as to what that might be?
We don't. That's not an expertise that we have in-house to determine the secondary and other effects that a project like this may have. I think certainly all of us intuitively believe that a project like this will have that effect or some effect. What level is that effect is, I just don't know.
Thank you.
Councilmember Newsom.
My question is directed towards staff. Have we ever done an exemption to the CFD rate before?
We have not, other than for affordable housing.
And then the other question would be, you had conversations about doing a possible reduction of rate. What would that look like, and is that feasible for the applicant?
It is legally feasible. You can adopt a separate, entirely separate rate and method of apportionment for projects that meet a certain criteria. You'd want to define that very carefully. You could also put La Plaza under the existing rate and method of apportionment and then just say, hey, it's according to council policy as to what percentage you charge. Now, that's going to be a lot more risky for the developer because they're always subject to that higher rate. A different council could change that because it's just a policy thing. So if I were La Plaza, I would certainly be looking for a separate rate to do.
Councilmember Funk.
Yeah, questions initially for staff. The question of the calculation of CPI in the development of the contract came up. How long in the period sequence from when we did the last fee study on these impact fees, have we been relying on the San Francisco, San Jose CPI, and to what extent have we changed that reliance?
So the rate and method of apportionment is adopted with the CFD in 2005. While the council may not change that without going to a vote of every person paying into the CFD, we have set council policy at different rates. What we have done is we have benchmarked it against the increased cost of a police officer during that time. In fact, the council adopted a policy last, I believe, May, just about a year ago, that said, okay, we're going to take the lesser of that CPI 5% or the benchmark of a police officer. And that is how that goes. Remember, the CFD is to help make sure that we continue to be able to add police officers and firefighters to respond to the additional calls that additional residents bring. And so it's important that we be able to continue to be able to not lose ground for that. As we've talked about, what that means, if for every residential unit we have that's not in the CFD, we are eroding services. We have less police officers per thousand because the money that comes in does not pay for that. This has been looked at extensively over the number of years. It wasn't adopted in 2005 and then forgotten. It wasn't changed during the recession and then forgotten. It is something that you guys look at every 2 years to make sure that we are on track and that it's consistent to everybody.
Okay. And to what extent is the calculation of fees in this consideration affected by the impact fee study that is currently in progress?
The impact fee study has no effect on this at all. The impact fee study that is currently in progress is related to infrastructure and what infrastructure is needed to serve additional development, whether it be residential, commercial, any of that. So if the impact fee thing looks at things like which roads do we have to widen, what overpasses do we have to do, which storm drains do we need to make bigger. So that deals with the impact. The Community Facilities District was based on that original number, again, with the rate and method of apportionment, and doesn't change. At that time, it was determined that it costs us just about $1,800 for each resident to provide services to each resident at the level that we were currently providing in 2005. And then you have to look at the revenues to offset that. So the certainly the property tax, 16% on a $400,000 condo, doesn't meet that 1800 threshold that's been indexed for inflation.
Mm-hmm. Do we have precedent for dealing with the differing impact of a mixed-use development that adds residential but also adds to our commercial and retailing space with the attendant sales tax benefits?
We've had a lot of discussion about that, and in fact had a lot of discussion about that when we originally adopted the CFD. If you remember at that time, Dove Creek was part of this. Dove Creek was supposed to have a substantial commercial portion of it, and it was determined that we don't, at that time, certainly this is a council policy, that we don't look at the commercial offsetting the residential portion. As we said, there was also substantial discussion at the time on, obviously, the lower the value of the housing, the bigger that gap is. The higher the value of the housing, there may not even be a gap because we receive more in property taxes. And there was substantial discussion at that time that, hey, we don't want to not charge the really expensive projects and only tax those that serve our lower income residents. That's not good policy. Mm-hmm. So we need the two to offset each other. So if somebody comes and says, hey, if you look at our numbers, because we're building million-dollar mansions, we shouldn't be in the CFD, that the policy was, no, they still belong in the CFD. Mm-hmm. Commercial was looked at the same way at that time. Now, since we've adopted the CFD, we haven't necessarily revisited that. We do not assess any of the amounts that you're eligible to assess on the commercial properties. We just only assess it on the residential.
Okay. So we have not had a situation where we were considering the impact of a commercial development where this project can't develop residential without developing the commercial because the commercial is on the ground floor. So we have not had that kind of situation previously.
I am not positive. I don't want to say that. We certainly have not had anything of this significance.
Okay. And then my last question, if I may, is for Max. If the council were to consider the option that I understand is available to us to have this come back with some kind of an adjustment to the rate to reflect the strategic impact of the property and the commercial element, the commercial element that has to be part of the project, to develop. This would bring us, as I understand it, to coming back to the council for on the July 11th meeting. With any additional information that maybe staff can elaborate on that, does that work? Would that timing be workable to you if the council considered some adjustment at that time?
Yes, that would be a lot better for us.
Okay.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. Rochelle, I was wondering if you could dig back in your institutional memory. And discuss what is meant by new growth area. Was that considered to be a geographically new area, or was that new development of one sort or another?
It was intended to be new development. It was not a geographic area. It was intended to be a complete overlay over the entire city, and that is how it has been applied.
So have we had any circumstances where something has developed in the downtown core and this was applied or not?
Not that I can remember. I don't believe so. I don't think we've had any substantial new housing. We have had some one or two units above, but nothing that would trigger the going into the CFD.
And so it's the number of units that actually triggers it?
It is the number of units and discretionary action. So it has historically been discretionary action. A few years ago, maybe even this year, we clarified that at what level is that discretionary action. And so that is what does that.
And do you know what that number is?
I believe it's five. Is that correct, Phil? Five or more units?
Yes, now it's five or more units with council policy.
Thank you.
And Rochelle, is it the case that if there is a piece of property that is currently zoned, it has, you know, from, you know, originally prior to the CFD, let's say you've got an acre and it's zoned for eight units, because it's over five, and you build those eight units, you're not in the CFD because you're already entitled to that. So there's no issue with the CFD. The issue really is increasing the density over the current entitlement, causing an even bigger drain on services. Is that correct?
That is no longer correct.
No longer correct. Okay.
Okay. That was for a period of time. Now it is just five units or more, you're in the CFD. So basically, okay. If you're building, if you are buying a home with a that's been built in theory since 2005, but there were some that were not there. If you're buying a home, you will be in the CFD if you're building five or more units.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. And then if we think about the applicant was talking about the increases, and you clarified the lesser of the a police officer's salary or the CPI. Can you, just for the, not only the benefit of the applicant, but also the public, we're not out here trying to get the maximum amount from people. We understand that while we are trying to provide services and we don't have the money to do as much as we want to, and we need that to provide services, we also realize that it is a burden on folks, and so we're not constantly increasing it by the max. So compared to what we could have done legally over that time frame, what did we actually do?
We certainly have done substantially less, but I don't know what that maximum number is. I'm kind of looking at Jerry, who does that calculation each year. Do you know that off the top of your head?
I'm sorry, I don't know that off the top of my head, but I know there has been quite some amount that we could have assessed that we did not. So,
okay, is my recollection from many years on the Finance Committee, and I know Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau and I have both been through this quite a bit on the Finance Committee, that it certainly has never been that maximum. There is a bigger amount, and we're very, very key to the fact that none of this feels fair on any end to anyone. So we're doing the best that we can to make sure we recover the cost of services and spread that as equitably as possible, but it can't work out perfectly. We know that. Let's see, Councilmember Funk.
Yes, an additional question for staff. For my benefit and for the public, can you clarify the difference between the impact fee that a developer of, say, a single unit would pay and incorporation into the community facilities district, or CFD, that is that happens when you've got five or more units in a development at once, whether those are apartments or houses?
The impact fee is a one-time fee that goes towards expanding our infrastructure. So when the developer gets their certificate of occupancy, just prior to their certificate of occupancy, they are required to pay an impact fee. That impact fee is based on a calculation where we look at what type of infrastructure do we need to build, to serve everybody in the general plan, to serve build out. And we also look at, okay, what is the value of the infrastructure currently in place that in theory our residents have already invested in, and you take the lesser of those two numbers, and that's part of the impact fee calculation. That's paid one time. It goes towards building facilities. It can not be put towards any services. Can't be paid for police officers, can't pay for firefighters, can't do any of those things. The CFD specifically goes towards either police, fire, or parks. So we have a number of neighborhoods that already pay into the CFD. Those funds get transferred to the general fund to hire additional police bodies, firefighters. I think half a parks worker is in there or was at one point. Without that CFD, those additional officers and firefighters are gone. They would not be here responding to calls, being able to meet our staffing requirements and all of that. So the idea was, what we were seeing is that our population was growing substantially back from 92 to 2000, but we weren't being able to add any more officers or firefighters. In fact, I think at one point our population grew by 8,000, and in that time we added one sworn officer. And so in theory, you should have one officer per 1,000 people, at least. 1.7 is the natural average. So what we were doing is we were saying, hey, our current residence services are being eroded for each new development we add. And that was the impetus for the CFD.
So following up on that, so each of these, the impact fees and the CFD are different from, say, what a homeowners association would provide that maintains the streets and hardscape and landscape and services within a particular development, but does not, as I understand it, a homeowners association wouldn't pay anything to the city for those additional police officers.
Correct.
Okay.
Do we have any other questions? No. What I would be willing to look at is not so much an exception for this project, because I'm concerned with, you know, cherry picking, like, okay, this project is good, let's not do that, and then let's say something happens in the Galaxy Theater area, and then they're subject to, if they're going to have, let's say, a mixed use at the back end, if something like that were to happen, or elsewhere. I think because we do have that precedent and it's important to us to revitalize our downtown, I would be willing to look at the downtown as a geographical area and come up with a percentage, whether it's maybe 50% or something like that, that we would apply in the downtown if it meets certain criteria. What sort of thoughts do any of you have on that? I'll look to the lights. Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, followed by Councilmember Fonzie.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, to me, you know, this project is critically important to, you know, jumpstarting our downtown, something that we've all strived to do for several decades. And so, I'm kind of disappointed that we're here at this point, but it is extremely important. But we do have to be careful of precedent setting. And we need to be careful what criteria we use to establish either an exception or a reduction in terms of a percentage. And so I'm certainly open to, you know, staff coming back to us with some couple of options, perhaps, and some rationale for either lowering the amount, applying a particular percentage to development, let's say, either in the downtown or the development that meets certain criteria. Or allowing an exemption for on some rational basis. But we can't, I think, as the mayor is alluding to, I think that to just say, well, this one is just so special, let's just, you know, wave it on this one, and then, you know, that would establish a precedent. Because I do believe we do have residential allowed for, multifamily residential allowed for in the Colony Square area next to Roundtable. And so, you know, we do have to be careful about establishing a precedent, but this project has so much promise and is so critical to us that I'm certainly open to discussing it as long as we have a rational basis for doing it and are very careful about the precedents we establish. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Fonzie, followed by Councilmember Newsom.
I too would be willing to look at some alternatives and would need a little bit more information. There's so many facets to this that downtown is one of the harder places to develop, and we're fully cognizant of that, that it has architectural design features that have to be added that are more expensive. It's hard to consolidate the lots. It's difficult to do parking. There are other aspects to this that make it slightly different than Dove Creek, let's say, or any of the other housing subdivisions. On the flip side of that, we know that residential does not pencil out for the city. What it does is that it demands certain services. Someone needs to call the fire department. They're sick. They need to call the police department. There's something going on outside. And it does increase the cost for the city. It's not a revenue neutral. And I understand what you're saying, Max, that you will be getting sales tax and property tax that will be a benefit to the city. The property tax comes anyway for a Dove Creek, for instance. The sales tax is the exception, which, as you stated, was $10,000, which isn't a huge amount. So we've got to look at the numbers, and we have to do right by all of our citizens and give you some benefit if we can, but I would like to see some alternatives, maybe two or three, that come back to the council before we make a decision.
Councilmember Newsom, followed by Councilmember Funk.
Mayor?
Yes.
May I just chime in just a little bit. The way that the noticing works is that we have to bring a rate and method of apportionment to the council, and then that 30-day clock starts from then. So your options, if we brought back three different options for you, I'm not positive that we can come up with a scientifically backed rationale or a number rationale behind that. It's a matter of at what level do we want to stimulate the downtown. But so if we brought that back to you at our next council meeting on June 11th, that means the first time you can do the notice of intent would be June 25th, which would push the vote till August 13th. So that would be something that you would want to make sure that would work with the applicant and his project, because he cannot get a building permit until this is complete. So I just wanted to get that in before we went too far down that road.
Okay. So really tonight we either go that route and, you know, with talking to the applicant, or we say, hey, here's our decision and move forward with it. Okay, Councilmember Newsom, followed by Councilmember Funk.
So I believe that our downtown is critical to our development and our community growth, and I think that this is an ideal project for that. One of the things that comes to mind, though, is we're trying to have our downtown grow, and how do we encourage business owners to want to do business with the city, want to bring new projects like you guys have done? We understand how time-sensitive and how critical finances are. Is there a way to do a temporary waiver or a reduction in the CFD for a fixed period, whether it be 2 years, 3 years, to get a project off the ground that helps out financially and it benefits both parties?
There is that possibility. They would annex into the CFD, and then you would set the zone for them at a certain percentage until a given time. So you could do that if you wanted.
And that, just about it, that was the option that we understood previously. We're not aware that this was going to get pushed to August, and that's not what we were talking about. So that option is not great for us. This other option is the one we want.
Which one?
This one with a reduction in the fees at the next hearing. So then we're good to go by July.
So the...
And I don't know the timing on all this. When I met earlier today, it was we may be able to go by July, not August. So I don't know where that came from, but that's not an option.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is you need to be going by July 11th, and so that means tonight we either need to, you know, one option, as Councilmember Newsom mentioned, is to say, you know, okay, we will give a stay, sort of like we do with impact fees, right? We might spread that out over 5 years. So maybe we do something where we say, okay, there's a ramp-up period where the fees are waived or reduced for some, you know, period of time, and then at year X they go to the normal rate that everybody else pays. The other option is to look and say, okay, in the downtown area, if development meets certain criteria, then we would like to assess the CFD at, say, 50%, just as an option, of the traditional rate. So those are really the two options that you would then be looking for, one of those two.
Right. Yeah.
So we could come back July 11th.
And I just want to say one more thing, too. It's really, you think about how can a task, we're all on the same page. We want a task here to grow and to thrive and do better. So you, we think about this every day. How can it be better? We're heavily invested in Tascadero. Yeah. And I know the council's position is that sales tax are going to bring it around, and maybe we get some large development up at where Kmart or Walmart was supposed to go, and maybe we get, you know, a large center down there at Dove Creek like they promised, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. But all of those businesses need population numbers around them. They need population rings. And so if we're talking about turning the downtown around or a downtown revitalization of any kind, it's going to largely hinge on populations. And so what's happening is people are developing on the outskirts of town where there's large residential pieces of land. If we encourage people to develop in downtown, that's population in the downtown. Those people are spending money every day. Not only that, but it's like a neighborhood watch, a natural neighborhood watch. As it is right now, it was vacant buildings with bums doing whatever the heck they wanted. And you have 42 residences with a well-lit parking lot. The crime will certainly go down. There's no way it goes up. We're 2 blocks from the police station. We're 2 blocks from the fire station. Mm-hmm. How is the downtown zone lumped in at the same rate that the rest of the city is? That's not going to get economic development. That's not going to get investment.
We understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And we could kind of keep going around and around with the numbers. So let's kind of continue. I think Councilmember Funk had something she wanted to say.
Yes, we are all committed to see this community thrive and recognize the vital importance of downtown. Given that, and given the particulars of this project, I can see us making some allowance, such as I'm a little nervous about us trying to create a set of criteria that would automatically do any project meeting this, doing that on the fly, and we're stuck with it, which would leave us in a position where the safer move might be to do a waiver for a period of time, given the particular strategic nature of this project and the relatively unique situation where we do get the additional very important and strategic commercial development intermixed with the residential, that mixed use model really has some different impact. That being said, I'm also not comfortable waiving the CFD altogether, not putting this project in the CFD if other new residential does, because we're all struggling as a community with the fact that that with very tight management of finances, we still have, this community is still projecting to continue to draw down on reserves to pay for basic operations of the city until about the time that Diablo Canyon closes. That's scary. And we're looking at having the revenue to support the services. You know, we can't maintain our roads, and we inadequately support our police now. So as we add residents, it does make sense for everybody to share a little extra of that burden. And even as we, so I think there's a place to parse this where we can do something helpful.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Thank you. I want to make sure I understand the timing issues here again. because essentially, and I know I wasn't looking for mathematical certainty in terms of a rationale, but just that there be a rationale, whether it's based on, the economic an imprecise estimate of economic benefit that we derive from having this development downtown. But my question on timing is, so if we, the original consent calendar recommendation was to adopt a resolution that would declaring our intent to annex this territory, then some point in time, you know, on a set protocol, it would go to the property owners, you know, which is the applicant, to vote on it. Is if we were to adopt, you know, that recommendation that, hey, we're going to put this property in a CFD, could we then at June 11th, based on your on staff feedback, have a discussion as to adjusting the amount or timing prior to them having to vote on it?
So, and I'm not positive this resolution and notice of intent has very specific language saying that they're going to be in the CFD at the rate of everybody else.
Okay.
There's a couple of options, and we didn't put those in there on this notice, and they have to be in the notice. If you want to do, I guess if you want to do something different than just put them in the regular CFD, then it needs to be on June 11th, and we have to. You won't have the ability to choose between four different notices at that date. You would have to say this is the one that's there. So what I need is kind of enough feedback from you guys tonight to kind of know, okay, staff has enough. We've heard enough of your concerns. We understand kind of what you're looking for to make a recommendation to put on that notice of intent. Because that notice of intent has to match the hearing 30 days later. So that's kind of where my problem is.
Because, I mean, I'm looking to be able to, you know, punt to June 11th without affecting the timing, but basically you're saying we can't do that. We have to give you clear enough guidance tonight so that you can file a clear enough notice of intent.
There may be one possibility that I don't know, but I have a feeling that we can't do, and that would be that they're in the regular CFD tonight, but you adopt a policy of some sort that says, hey, if it's in the downtown and, you know, it has at least X amount of square feet of commercial to residential, some sort of ratio, and the commercial is quality commercial, retail, restaurants, not insurance agencies or some of that, that we will do a separate percentage. But I would have to check with the consultant to make sure of that, and I'm kind of afraid not. So that's a really risky thing, and I don't know that. I mean, that June 11th date is pretty important to these guys, so I would not recommend that.
I understand. I mean, I think, unfortunately, you know, we all know that, you know, writing detailed policy up here on, you know, in a 15-minute period or an hour-long period is not the greatest way to do business, and yet it sounds like time-wise you need a fair degree of direction from us tonight in order to make the timing work.
I need, it doesn't have to be specific, and I'm certainly not looking for right specific wording or any of that, but what I am looking for is, hey, if I could have a feel of where you guys are, because giving a moratorium for 5 years versus a percentage forever has a very different long-term effect. Kind of knowing where you are on those types of things so that what we bring to you is acceptable to both the applicant and to the council.
Using those two examples, let's say two options of either giving, let's say, a five-year moratorium and then it goes to the full rate, or conversely applying a 50% rate, let's say, I am wondering, you know, and might put Jerry on the spot, is, you know, what's that impact on the city? And then asking the applicant what's, you know, which of those would be better for them, you know, financially in terms of getting the project built, you know, financially or in terms of lending.
Well, I'll jump in first, I guess. Ours would be the not the moratorium, but the percentage. And I think that that's a really important decision for the council to make for not just this project, but all projects in the downtown. It's incredibly, it's a huge deal. It's a gigantic deal. And this is a great way to get economic development going as opposed to stifling it.
Thank you.
All right, so if we take a look at what the applicant would be asking for, basically, City Manager, what you're saying to us is if we say, yes, we would be open to some sort of criteria, not something that we here tonight have to develop, but you have enough input from us. And this is criteria that we've used in other realms, too. We say density bonus if you meet these criteria. There's certain criteria that the city already has when it comes to quality development and what that looks like and what a benefit to the city would be. So we can look at the downtown zone and figure out some of those criteria. And if there's criteria that any of the council is interested in, let's go ahead and give that input. And then maybe just kind of thoughts on, we've kind of thrown around the 50% number. I would like Councilmember Fonzi to maybe come back in. You kind of spoke in the beginning, and as this conversation has gone on, I'm curious where you sit.
I don't think we're, at least I am not prepared to say 50%. I think we need more information. I know that's what you're looking for. I understand, but we have to have this pencil out for the good
absolutely.
Of the city as a whole, because what happens is those residents that are living in the city now will have a reduction in services. Basically, they're paying for something that you're building. And that's a tough one for us. We have to weigh out the benefits versus the detriments. And so I'd like to, I know this is a burden upon staff to have two or three different criteria, you know, whether it's 20%, 30%, 50%, I'm not sure where the council wants to go with it. But it has to be a reasonable amount that would be suitable to encourage economic development in only one area, and that would be downtown from my perspective. Only. No place else. And it'd have to be based on certain economic issues, such as what are you going to be bringing in or benefiting the city with, sales tax and tourism or whatever that criteria may be. And I'm not sure that June 11th is really enough time for them to do it. And as I recall, we're having PG&E come, and that'll be a big discussion as well on that particular date regarding rolling brownouts or blackouts that they're proposing. And I don't want to give that short shrift. I'd like to move this out to July, and I know this may not help you out and in your development, but we need more time. Is it that important to you?
Absolutely, yeah. And I hope you didn't misunderstand me too. I'm not pushing for 50% or any percentage. You know, like you said, we want what works for both parties. We've been citizens here for a long time. We're heavily invested, so we want you guys to succeed too. I don't know what that percentage is, but on our side of it, I know we've asked for those previous studies that were done to justify this CFD, and we never got them. I'm happy to go through those. I can do that in a matter of a day. And I'm sure I can justify it in the same way that our project will not be anything near that those case studies were looking at. Our project will absolutely be benefiting the city way far and above any of those, and I could easily prove that in a month. Easily, a week. You give me a week, I'll do it.
So it's actually that we can say how much it takes to serve any resident in Atascadero. It doesn't matter. You know, we don't break that down by if you live downtown or you live 2 miles out of town, what it costs to serve a particular resident. So you're more than welcome to see whatever, you know, information that we came up with. But what we're really looking at tonight is what are we willing to do in terms of a flexibility for the added benefit that this brings. Would it be feasible if we're trying to, is it possible to meet this timeline if we were to have a, should we call it a task force or a very, which would consist of, I would say, Councilmember Fonzi and maybe Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, if they would be willing to work with staff and come up with something that you two would see as meeting criteria and the logic that both of you are looking for. Would that be acceptable? and Charles. Okay. So it sounds like, do we have a bit of a consensus that we could task our two colleagues with that to come back with something to us in terms of downtown, the requirements, and a percentage that then would be on our June 9th meeting? 9th? 11th?
It's June 11th.
June 11th. Okay. No, it's June 9th. June 9th meeting.
It's July 9th and June 11th. And just as a reminder, that means that the staff report and the agenda is out a week from today. So it's a lot of work over the next week.
Okay. All of our dates. We've been talking about this far too long. So I've got kind of three of us are good with that. Let me ask Councilmember Newsom, how are you with that?
I'm good with that. I think the percentage should be determined based on the city needs as well. And I'm sure the applicant will agree with, you know, the city comes up with. So thank you for your time.
Okay. And Councilmember Funk, is that acceptable to you?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm good.
So Amanda, what do you need from us? Is that enough that we've had this consensus, or do we need to take some sort of formal vote tonight?
You do not need to take a formal vote. You have the authority to appoint an ad hoc committee, which
Excellent.
It sounds like that's what you just did.
That's what we've done. All right. Great. Thank you very much. And thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now that we're done with the consent calendar, that doesn't happen very often. We are on to updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The first item I want to talk about is Talk on the Block. So this is a reminder that our new Talk on the Block sessions begin this week. These will be very casual gatherings where city staff and council members will go out to visit the various neighborhoods throughout the city. This is sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce. They will be facilitating and putting this on. The dates are up there. So we have the United Methodist Church will be tomorrow night, May 29th. We have the Community Church of Atascadero on May 30th. On June 4th, we will have one at Pavilion on the Lake. And on June 6th, we will have one at Monterey Road Elementary. These are fashioned so that the city will be making, city staff will be doing a very brief presentation, 10 to 15 minutes, just talking a little bit about the city, what we do, what we don't do, a little bit about each of the departments so people have an idea of what it is that we do on a daily basis. It's you know, sometimes people aren't aware of that. And then we're going to open it up to the members, the residents, the community that comes out to those meetings to ask any questions they want about any subject. Staff will be answering those. Council members will be attending. Not all are able to attend all of them, but you guys are certainly welcome to attend as many as you would like. You will not be deliberating or making any decisions, but are there just to listen. So the council will be there to listen. Staff will be answering questions. And we invite everybody to come out. We're going to try and keep those to just about an hour overall, but certainly staff will be available after that for a little bit to answer any additional questions that we weren't able to address during the meetings. So I highly encourage everybody, please come out to these Talk on the Block meetings. Just one, get your questions asked, learn a little bit about what's going on. Hopefully there'll be a great format. We're looking forward to doing this. We have some recent new arrivals at the zoo. In April, we had a baby prehensile-tailed porcupine arrive. Fun fact, they're known as porcupets. Didn't know that. Now I've learned that that's what a baby porcupine is called. We also have a new young female crested screamer, that's the bird down there, that is bonded with the zoo's existing male crested screamer, so we're very happy that those two are happy together. And last but not least, we have a bear cat. We in fact have two bear cats here in Atascadero. So we have a new female binturong. Bee the binturong joins our male, Johnson. So both of them are right there next to our new Thelma Vetter Red Panda Experience exhibit. I know that Johnson likes to hide up in the trees. He's got a little bough up there right by the tiger cage where he can oversee the tiger. But we're happy to have Bea on board, too. So we're happy to welcome these Bearcats, along with all Bearcats here in Atascadero. So we're that's pretty exciting. We also have a new paddle boat operator at the lake. The paddle boat company, a new paddle boat and rental concession at Atascadero Lake Park, is open for business. They also offer kayak rentals, too. Their weekend hours will be all year long, so that will be nice, not just during summer. And they're from 11 to 5 p.m. And summer weekday hours are Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from noon to 4 p.m. So hopefully we'll get some nice weather and everybody can come out and enjoy our beautiful lake. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the council may have.
Thank you, Ms. Rickard. Any questions of council? Seeing none, we will move on to community forum. This is the time that we have reserved to hear from the members of the public about anything that you want to talk to us about that is not on our agenda tonight and over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and the light is on to give you a timer, to give you an indicator of when your time is running down. We do ask that you state your name for the record. Our total public comment time will be limited to 30 minutes unless otherwise changed by the council. And just know that anything brought to us tonight is not going to be a subject for discussion. We are not allowed to do that. But city staff, we may be able to briefly address, or we'll get back to you on any concerns that you might have. And weekdays, Monday through Friday, any concerns, issues that you need to be brought up to the city, you can reach the city clerk at 805-470-3400 or cityclerk@atascadero.org. And with that, we'll go ahead and open up community forum.
Hi, my name is Kimberly Davidson. I came here a few weeks ago, and there was some confusion regarding why I was coming. I am not requesting
I'm sorry, if you could raise that up a little bit, just so we can make sure to hear you clearly.
I would, but
Chief, might you be able to assist Ms. Davidson? And we'll reset your timer for you. How's that?
Okay. So my name is Kimberly Davidson. The last time I came to the meeting, there was some confusion as to why I came. My issue is the speed on my street, not requesting sidewalks. I know our street is very narrow. I know that we're not requesting sidewalks. We're requesting for the average speed to be slowed down, or the majority of the speed of people going through to slow down. The bridge, the 41 bridge, went in 11 years ago, and in that time there has never been any speed limit to Mercedes Avenue, and it has created some very fast moving vehicles going through. There was an accident before the bridge went through, which caused part of the road to be closed off because there was a little boy that was hit. All of that traffic has been redirected to my street. So it is a very fast moving street with no speed limit. It's just crazy. Our only options are to do homemade signs, try to ask people to slow down. Some people get very upset when you give them a homemade sign. They go faster. I've done street calming reports. I've called for extra patrol. I've done emails. I've called. I've done everything I could possibly can. I'm at a loss as to what else I can do. There's supposed to be a speed survey. I'm not sure when that's going to happen. The bridge, the Via Bridge, was supposed to be closed because it wasn't classified as safe. Now it is the shortcut from going traffic way to 41, and it's just scary. It hasn't been addressed, and our street is just at the mercy of people who are going by. I don't want to wait for flowers and a cross to be on my street before somebody does something. I don't want somebody to die, including me, because people drive too fast. I've brought this to the attention, and I don't want a lawsuit. I don't want somebody to sue the city because, nothing's being done. So I'm asking, please assess this. Please do something. We have 25, 35, 45, and 55 mile an hour speed limits in a tenth of a mile distance on my street. It's crazy. I'm asking for assistance. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak at public comment? Seeing none, we will close community forum and bring it back to council and to staff. I would ask staff, I know that we've had this conversation before, could you maybe just let us know where that speed survey is and certainly to be connecting with Ms. Davidson to update her.
Yeah, the police department is working with the public works department on putting together the survey this summer. I know that Ron has been in contact with a local area organization that does that, receiving some bids from them, estimates, and we have a supplemental request as part of the budgeting process to fund that, so it's moving ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, now we will move on to our public hearings. This is our amendment to our fee schedule, and prior to turning this over to Director Rangel, I will ask if we have any ex parte. And ex parte is where, if we have had a conversation outside of this public process that would impact our decision-making tonight, we are legally bound to let you know about that, as well we should. So I will go from my right to my left and ask if we have any ex parte.
No ex parte.
No ex parte.
No ex parte.
No ex parte on this.
No ex parte.
Thank you. And I will go ahead and turn this over to Director Rangel.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. So this evening we're going to look at a service fee update for our service fees for different types of city services and planning services. So as you may recall, the service fees that we charge are for to cover the costs of the city of providing those services to specific individuals. So the costs are, the fees are calculated based on costs. The last study that we did was done in 2014, and annually in May, every year we come back and adjust those fees by CPI. That study was done to determine how much it costs us to provide those services, and then we can charge accordingly. Some services are tax supported, and some are tax subsidized, and some are a little bit of both. So the CPI adjustment for this year was 3.49, so all fees that are eligible to be increased by that amount were adjusted. There are some fees that aren't eligible that are set by the state and things like that, so those did not change. And in addition, there are a handful of things for recreation that didn't change because those are really based on market conditions, and we try to keep those affordable to families and things like that. So the recreation ones tend to be a little bit different than the rest of them. If adopted tonight, these fees will be in effect in 60 days. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jerry. And we might want to note there were a couple of things that were outside of the normal CPI increase. We did do weed abatement recently and had decided on that fee, so that new fee is in here, correct?
Yes, good point. That is, so it's captured in here. That fee was previously adopted, but it kind of is encompassed in this. And along those same lines, we did do some updates to the zoo admission fees.
Correct. Zoo admission fees to try to, one of the things we're looking at is trying to make that fiscally neutral, and so this certainly helps to start doing that. So those are the two things that are sort of out of the ordinary. The CPI increases, as you said, don't apply to something that's state-specific or with recreation. That's something that that we feel is a community benefit to subsidize. So I want to let the public know this is something that in 2014 was a big undertaking. And if you want to see, I have it on my iPad. I don't actually have the document, but you can look it up online and see what the fee schedule is for absolutely everything in Atascadero. It is public information. And in 2014, we undertook this study because we were way behind in where we needed to be to recoup the costs of delivering services. And so we did that study, put that into effect, and every year since have done these adjustments. And so this is really about us keeping up with the cost of delivering services. So with that, I will go ahead and open up to council questions. We have Councilmember Funk.
Yeah, thank you. A couple brief questions. We had a discussion earlier tonight about the nature of the CPI that was used to adjust certain other fees. Do you happen to know which CPI we're using? Is it specific to a geographic area or a set of services, or is it a national CPI?
So it is a little bit of a challenge in our area. Obviously, we don't have a CPI specific for our area that we can get, but the state does produce some. So these are largely done for the bigger metropolitan areas. So I believe we use the same CPA. I'm just looking to see if we have named it here. I believe we use the same CPI that we use for other adjustments for our assessment districts and the CFD. So I believe it is the San Francisco, San Jose CPI.
It says here in the staff report the CPI used was a California weighted average change from calendar year 17 to 18 calculated by the State Department of Industrial Relations.
Thank you for that correction. Yes.
I know. It's a big report, so I don't expect you to remember that off the top of your head. I certainly didn't.
We have a lot of adjustments going on now.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And then could you just tell us, aside from the weed debate abatement, what's the largest change in here? If
dollar-wise or?
Dollar-wise or percentage-wise. Is there anything particularly that was...
So dollar-wise, I don't have that off the top of my head, but overall, it was the CPI adjustment for all of them, mm-hmm. other than those couple of things like the weed abatement and the zoo admission fees.
And so, and the zoo admission fees for the public's benefit changed by how much?
Let's see. I believe they changed.
I think it's $3 per visit.
Thank you.
The cost for adults went up $3, the cost for kids went up $3, and the cost for seniors went up $3.
Yeah. So that still leaves us with a $10 general admission for adults and $9 for seniors, which beats the price of the movies.
Correct.
Okay.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. Just a question about the zoo fees. Was this based on zoo fees at other zoos, or this was just $3 and that was the decision?
It was kind of a combination of different items. So we are looking, based on our discussion at the Council Strategic Planning about trying to be bring the zoo to a more fiscally neutral area, and looking at other zoos, zoo admission fees, looking at other avenues for entertainment. As Councilperson Funk said, kind of comparing it to a movie theater experience. So it was kind of a combination of looking at all of those different items and seeing what would be most appropriate.
Okay. I understand. I did look up the cost of going to the movies if you were under 10 or 12, and it is $9.50, and we're proposing it to be to $8. My only concern is if a person has four children, it becomes exorbitantly expensive to take younger children into the zoo. And these are the kids we want to have love the zoo and want to come back and be frequent flyers, if you want to say, in the zoo. So I just wondered if consideration was given to raising this from ages 5 to 12 so that under 3 could get in free, or there was some other way that this could be made a little more affordable for the young people.
Sorry, you're saying 5 to 12 instead of 3 to 12? Is that your question?
Just proposing it. I'm throwing it out there, yes.
Certainly, that's something that if the council desires, we can look at. We've kind of just gone along with that 3 to 12. It's been fairly consistent. And we do have an avenue for memberships as well.
Thank you.
Any other council questions for staff? Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
I did have a question. I am concerned about the raise in terms of, you know, potentially reducing attendance in a way that would reduce our net take, but I'm you know, prepared to accept staff's recommendation on it. I did have a question for you. You just mentioned memberships, and that is, what if somebody joins the Zoological Society or as a member, what is the rate for them? Do they get free admission during the term of their membership, or what? How does that work?
They do get free admission to the Charles Paddock Zoo, and they also get either free or discounted admissions to other zoos as well.
Right, and in turn, the association, you know, provides things for the zoo.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other council questions? Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and open this item up to public comment. If there's anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward and state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes. All right, seeing none, I will go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion or a motion.
I would like to make a pitch to make this age 5 when you raise the rate instead of 3.
My concern with that is because we don't necessarily know the numbers, we could significantly offset and not actually achieve what we're trying to achieve. So I'm not sure.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by significantly offset.
Like, I'm wondering how many are, you know, how many of the 3- and 4-year-olds are we bringing in where we say they're free and we're completely letting go of that, and then any increase we're making, then you're completely offsetting and we're not actually getting ahead. I mean, you all have heard us speak about this. The zoo is not a moneymaker. No. It's something that we subsidize with tax dollars, and so taxpayers are already subsidizing everyone who goes to the zoo, so I'm a little bit concerned about doing more and more of that, but I do understand where you're coming from.
Well, I know that there are several preschools that are located nearby, and that was really where I was coming from, that they would like to take their children there to develop a love of the zoo, and then the kids will take their parents and the other kids, and it kind of escalates that way. You know, I have no proof of that, but I do know that there are several nearby, and the thought came to me that if we made it age 5 and the preschools could freely go in and look at this and go on out, it might actually pay off.
I share the mayor's concern, though, and I would be more open to, and maybe you don't, maybe staff doesn't want this headache, but I'd be more open to having a second rate for what would it be, 4- and 5-year-olds, than to raising the free age, because I'm afraid, like the mayor alluded to, we would lose too much. We might lose a substantial amount of revenue. Because I certainly know with my kids, that was the prime. That was prime zoo going age, was 4 and 5. Mm-hmm. So,
Councilmember Newsom,
perhaps we can just do 3 to 5 is $5, and 5 to 12 is 8. Is that a doable option?
Anyone else want to weigh in?
Something. Like that.
I just want to check. Ask staff if the if having 4 rates as opposed to 3 would create complications with signage or computer programming in a way that would be defeat the purpose of what we're trying to do or be seriously non-essential.
I believe that we can accommodate the computer programming without a problem. I'm not positive about the signage and how much that would cost, redoing some of the signs and stuff that we have, but it's certainly doable, and it's probably only a few $100 investment to completely redo those as opposed to just changing out the dollar amounts.
Do we have any indications, like have we received complaints or hearing that, you know, folks aren't coming to the zoo because they feel it's too expensive for the kids or anything of that nature?
No, in fact, the zoo director spends a lot of time looking at elasticity of the prices and some of those. Certainly, to go to a major metropolitan zoo, you're looking in the $40 to $50 range, not $10 or anything like this. But we have a substantially smaller zoo, so you wouldn't expect to pay that. There is some information that I've received at zoo conferences that, honestly, if you have too low of a price at your zoo, that actually deters people from coming because they feel like, okay, it can't be well run or well kept or lack of value. I haven't really looked at, I will tell you that most zoos that we go to, that two-year-old to three-year-old is the cutoff. Honestly, being able to tell the difference between a three and a five-year-old, if a parent can't afford it, let me tell you, there's a lot of really tall three-year-olds out there that say that. But certainly you have that flexibility. You can set it wherever you would like.
Okay, thank you. My preference is to keep it as recommended, yet I'm certainly willing to compromise if I'm in the minority on that. Yes, we
have it. I'll go ahead and make the motion that we approve this with the one revision that we have a fee of $5 from age 3 to 5 at the zoo.
Is it 3 to 5 or 3 and 4? It'd be 3 and 4, and then 5 and up is.
I'm saying 3 to 5.
Wait, so currently, I don't have the ages in front of me. Currently, it's 3 and up or 3 and under is free.
It's 3 to 12.
It's 3 to 12. So now you're saying 3 to 5. So the 3-year range would be a new rate of only 5.
Correct. What I'm looking at is those that are under kindergarten age, and I know that that can vary from child to child.
I think five tends to
I'm
be
targeting the preschooler, which attempting to. And if you think 4 is a more reasonable number, I have no problem with that. You know, I'm not an expert on preschool.
I'd feel better with 3 to 4. Again, not my favorite, but if I'm outnumbered, what are folks thinking?
I would kind of prefer that we keep it at $5 for 3 and 4 year olds and raise the rate as suggested for 5 to 12 year olds.
Is that a second?
Well, it's an amended second, I guess.
I'll accept the amendment.
All right. Roll call, please. Motion by Councilmember Fonzi to accept staff recommendation with the change of 3 and 4 year olds would be at $5. Everything else stay as recommended. Second by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi.
Yes.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We have no management reports tonight, so we will go on to council announcements and committee reports. This is where we, on our own initiative, can let you know what maybe we've been up to out in the community, and also to let you know the committees on which we sit throughout the city and the county, what we're up to, and deliver any report to you and to our colleagues here. So I will go from my left to my right.
I have nothing to report.
Thank you. We did have a city schools committee meeting, and I probably should let city manager address some of what happened there, but we had a good meeting with a couple of the trustees, Councilmember Newsom and myself, talked over some traffic and pedestrian-related concerns and got some updates on what the schools have been up to. And of course, you all attended the event last Friday where we celebrated the Graybots winning the world championship for robotics. We also are having finance committee meetings where we're addressing our development of our 2019 to 2021 budget. We will be having another meeting this week on Thursday at 3 o'clock in room 306 in this building. And so we're proceeding apace, and Councilmember Funk and I serve on that committee. And the public is welcome to those meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. I have a Economic Vitality Corporation have a meeting tomorrow, actually with some North County folks. So Mike Manchek with the EVC is coming up to meet with the mayor of Paso, myself, and some of the business owners who are on the board, and kind of have a discussion about economic development in the North County. SLOCOG and the Regional Transportation Agency meet next week. And both Councilmember Funk and myself met with Transitions Food and Shelter with some of their board members and had a discussion about what we see as a city in terms of a warming center potential for this winter, because the permanent facility up in Paso Robles will not be ready in time to serve individuals this year. And what we talked to them about is let them know that we would really like to see a solution for the North County that is in Paso Robles. And that is something that we would work together on, Atascadero and Paso, in terms of transportation. We'd like to get individuals used to going to Paso. We'd like to be sharing that responsibility where we have Echo here in Atascadero and having the warming center in Paso. So we'd like to spread that out throughout the North County and between the communities. Subsequently, I have had a meeting with Jeff Wilshusen, who is the president of TFS, along with Mayor Martin and Mayor Pro Tem Steve Gregory from Paso, and talked about what would the options be. And so we are starting that discussion, and we'll continue that. And so I'll kind of let all of you know where that goes and how. What kind of a role we might end up playing, like in terms of transportation. And the city managers have been involved in those conversations as well. Let's see. Just talk on the block. The city manager already mentioned it, but please come out. First of all, too, I want to thank the chamber for putting this on. I want to thank Medina Light Show for doing the audio. So Manny's coming and doing all the, you know, microphones and speakers and everything. And to the churches, to the Methodist Church, the Community Church, to Monterey World School, and of course staff who's going to be there for all of this and staffing the pavilion, and then even to my colleagues who I know are going to take time to be there as well. So we're really looking forward to hearing from you. The idea is that it's comfortable and casual, it's easy, it's in your neighborhood. If the one in your neighborhood doesn't work for you, come to another one. Anyone's welcome at all of them. So we really look forward to seeing you there. And with that.
Thank you. I met with the Air Pollution Control District, and I need to convey to staff that they are going to be sending you climate action plan assistance. So if we're going to be reviewing our climate action plan, which I don't know whether that's coming up soon or not, the request has been made that they would like to come and see you. And so I have requested that they not bring us boilerplate and work with us on the ways that it would fit our city rather than being just the standard plan. So I'll give you a heads up. The City Design Review Committee met recently and talked about a mini storage unit that's proposed between the Bordeaux Apartments and Paloma Creek Park and Dove Creek, and that is going forward to the Planning Commission with some revisions made regarding appearance that the Design Review Committee put forward. Thank you.
And the others have addressed the joint committees on which we serve, so I'll just mention that we had a wonderful dinner meeting with the League of California Cities at the Allegretto Resort and Vineyards, in which Mayor Moreno and Councilmember Bourbeau and I were all present, representing our fine city. And we had that our region for the League of California Cities extends all the way down to Ventura. The Paso Robles is basically the north end of this region. And we gather periodically. It's a time to get to know others who are dealing with similar issues in their own communities, to network with each other so that we can find, you know, solutions that have worked elsewhere and not have to reinvent the wheel and not have to make mistakes that others have made. All of that connecting is valuable to us in supporting our work to serve you.
Thank you. I don't believe we have any other individual determinations, and so I think we are meeting. Oh, you do. Oh, my apologies. Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes, I have received two notices from PG&E, and I suppose everybody in the audience and here at this dais has also received that regarding outages that may come in the summer due to high winds, low humidity, and fire hazard that could come into our area, and they said would last a minimum of 48 hours. And I know PG&E is coming, I believe it's June 11th. Is that correct? Or sometime soon. And I'm wondering if we could have additional information at that time, perhaps from our Public Works Director, regarding things like generators for the sewage treatment plant. Is it going to fail in 48 hours, or can it go further? We don't really know this. We might want to have John Neal talking about the same thing for our water system. It might be helpful to have someone from the Chamber of Commerce talking whether gas pumps at a gas station can work. I don't really know. We're in new territory. This is kind of like an emergency. If this were to happen, where does this leave us? Do we need to be doing a tabletop exercise to talk about this with our EOC? I don't know. It's a big deal, and I don't want it to be swept away and under the table. I want us to begin thinking about it, because we have people out here that use insulin and need to refrigerate it. We have old people, if it's during a hot air time, they will need those fans because their electricity is off. They will not have them and could have health issues. Could we open a cooling center? I don't know. You know, there's on and on. I can see scenario after scenario. And I'm wondering if staff could perhaps help us out when we listen to PG&E to know where we're going and whether we can handle it.
So I think we can try, if that is the desire of the council. It is only intended to be a, 15-minute presentation from PG&E. We do have the budget scheduled for that night also. So I can reach out to others to see. I know that certainly the fire chiefs in the county, along with Public Works, Water Company, and everybody is very aware of this. And we are looking at those things and trying to work with PG&E and understand their communications plan and other things. PG&E did have a tabletop exercise scheduled for the end of May that all of the cities were going to participate in, and we were to get a lot better information from that. That has now been pushed out until the end of June, and is going to be put on by County OES. Certainly we have generators for our wastewater lift stations, for our sewage treatment plant, as does the water company, along with gas to last us more than 48 hours. But those other things that you talked about, such as insulin and gas at the gas pumps and food in your freezer, all of those things are things that people need to plan for. They need to plan to have enough water and other things also, just in case. There is a list, and we are developing a countywide communications plan for this. We're certainly looking forward to hearing more from PG&E on the 11th.
Also, it seems to me, and this is my opinion only and may not apply to anybody else, but it seems to me that this is a political act on the part of PG&E, and this may be something we need to react to as a League of California Cities to say, this is an emergency when you do this to us. That we have people who can't charge their phone, they can't get emergency services, they can't feed them at Echo, do we have more crime? I don't know. You know, there's too many unknowns in this. And whether that could be something that could be broached, it might be helpful too.
That is a discussion that is taking place across many cities throughout the state. I do not believe that the League has taken a formal position on this, but we are not the only city that is having that. And there are a lot of cities that receive their power through more rural areas that the transmission lines are that will be also shut off. So some of the more urban cities that have not had to deal with this may be shut off for 48 hours too, even though there may not be high winds in that area. So
I have a feeling that the citizens will look to the city for information. And at the very least, we need to think about our public information officer and those kind of issues at the very least. Big deal. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I thank you for bringing it up, but it sounds like we are looking at all of those things. Next, that meeting in June will be sort of that first look at PG&E and coming, talking to the public, and with the tabletop exercise you're doing the end of June, but we will be getting information out and finding out how is PG&E disseminating information and making sure the public is aware of what they need to be aware of. That's very important. Any other individual determinations or actions? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and adjourn.